Hearing about a storm like the deadly Great Lakes hurricane of 1913 really reminds you of the power of nature and weather in particular. We're going to be talking about the weather now, find out what else is in store for us for this winter with our UW weather guy, Steve Ackerman, who joins us. I'm really glad to have Steve along. He directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW and also professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences. And Steve, great to have you back.
It's great to be here talking about weather while we're indoors.
Yeah, John Martin is off. His dad's getting an award.
I think. His dad's getting a career award. He's a minister. And so John flew back. I don't know if he flew back to just to surprise him, but to go there for the award ceremony.
That is very, very cool. Yeah. Well, you know, that hurricane was something else. That hurricane of 1913 was something else.
Oh, yeah.
John in Richland Center has something about a typhoon, so I wanted to get him on. We didn't get him on during the first part with Michael Schumacher. So, John, thanks for calling.
Hi. My father survived the worst typhoon in Navy history. They lost three destroyers to Davy Jones of the Deep. And my father told me once, he said, his tugboat had 12 men in the pilot house. They rolled like a barrel. And they came back up, and otherwise I wouldn't be here today.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. So they flipped completely?
Yep. Oh. Over. It was 53-foot seas and 102-mile-an-hour sustained wind for 2 days.
Oh, man.
Mm. Worst naval history in all.
What year was that?
Yeah.
1944.
44. Wow. Well, thank you, John. I'm glad you're here to tell us about that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's
That kind of wind.
That kind of wind over an ocean will generate really big waves. Part of what determines a wave is even on the Great Lakes is the sustained winds, how strong they are, and then the fetch, the open water.
Yeah.
And so they could easily build winds. Waves that are going to
be over
be bigger than the tugboat.
Well, that's like five stories.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. 100-foot waves. They've seen 100-foot waves, five stories. That's pretty close, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, a story is about 10 feet, I think. And then if thinking of in terms of a house story is about 10 feet, and then a roof on it be add another 8 feet or so. Our house is 38 feet. It's three stories. And waves that are dwarfing that house.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Oh man. Thanks for that call. And if Nancy, hold on just a second before we get to you. The November storm of 1913 was really a hurricane. They say it was a hurricane.
They say it's a hurricane. It wasn't quite. It's not a hurricane.
We don't have hurricanes
up here. And they conform even in satellite imagery now. There was a something, you know, they put in quotes the Lake Huron hurricane. And if you look at it, it looks like a hurricane and it's really strong and low pressures, but the temperature structures are nothing like a hurricane.
Okay.
So they're not officially a hurricane, even though we get hurricane force winds in Wisconsin, the upper Midwest, all the time from these mid latitude cyclones, winter storms, as well as from thunderstorms.
Yeah, there we go. Ken and Ridgeway, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wondering if you guys have any outlook or general prediction for the winter season this year in Wisconsin, or if that's even possible.
One officially came out. Now, possible with regard to accuracy is another thing. So I'm going to give you two. I'm going to give you the official one that was just released by NOAA and their long-term forecasting. And as you might have guessed, doing seasonal forecasting is really hard. And so what they generally think of is above normal, below normal, or equal chances of being above or below. And for the state of Wisconsin and for most of the upper Midwest, both temperature and precipitation are classified for the winter as being equal chances of either one. So not a lot of hope. John, last month, and I could pick on him because he's not here, although maybe he's listening in, was going for a warmer December and warmer November back in October, because there isn't a snowpack up in Canada. But November's been pretty cold for us, 3 degrees or so below normal for southern Wisconsin. So, so basically we don't know.
And I was in the Bayfield area over the weekend, and it was 2 degrees at one point, and I don't know, 20, 25 mile an hour winds.
Oh, yeah.
Out in that weather, it's cold.
It's cold, yeah.
It's cold. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we had that this morning in southern Wisconsin. If you woke up early, I mean, it was just blowing snow and cold.
Cold. Thanks, Ken. Nancy in Mazamani, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, hello. I have a story to tell about, it's called Mammatus clouds. They're the clouds that the lower surface is in the cellular pattern of pouches, and sometimes they're indicative of strong storms or even tornadoes. About my mom was a kindergarten teacher, but I think she was a closet meteorologist, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably about 9 or 10 years old in the late 50s and lived out in the country about 4 miles south of Fond du Lac. My mom looked up at the sky, saw Mammatus clouds, and said we might be in for a bad thunderstorm. And this was before we had NOAA weather radios or technology, really, for predicting or warning of severe weather. It got very dark, very windy, and it started to rain, hail, thunder, and lightning, and we all headed to the basement. And the storm blew over quickly, but we ended up losing 5 big hickory trees in our front yard. And there was lots of tree and structural damage throughout the neighborhood as well. Many years later, when my husband taught his weather unit to his 8th-grade earth science students, and they were learning the names of various cloud formations, I gave him a hint as to how his students could remember the name Mammatus clouds. And it's Mom Made Us Come In.
I love it. Thanks, Nancy.
You're welcome.
That's a good story.
Mammatus, is that how it's
Mammatus.
Mammatus.
Yeah, is the, I think, the more official way of saying it, but Mammatus is a way to remember it.
And you say Mammatus.
Mammatus, right, say is Mammatus.
There we go.
But yeah, they're usually attached to thunderstorms, and the thunderstorm can miss you or it can hit you, and obviously it hit Nancy and her family.
There you go. Thanks, Nancy, again for calling. I appreciate it. I can remember those clouds. Again, in northern Wisconsin in the summer, driving north, and they were really low. And it was scary.
They generate, when they're there, too, they're very dark.
Yes.
Because they're blocking out the sun. And so they're very contrasty as well. And then sometimes, I mean, my most memorable ones are ones around sunset, where all of a sudden the sun will get low in the sky and peak and illuminate them on the bottom, and then they just glow, and it's just great.
We had an email from Jim, by the way, and this is something totally different. Could you comment on wind devils in west central Minnesota? I experienced one of the in the late 60s, occurred to me on a bright, sunny, and warm day in the summer with clear skies. In a matter of seconds, a sudden tornado-like swirl of wind came up, And when it did not seem more than 10 to 20 feet in diameter. We were surveying on a highway construction grade and saw dust in the swirl as we dropped to our knees.
Yeah. So those are dust devils, and that's a great description. They're like little whirling whirls of wind. If they pick up dust, they'll look like a tornado, although they're not nearly as strong as a tornado, so... If one hits you, it's going to be very uncomfortable if it's carrying around dust. Some of them can get really high. They're caused by temperature contrast, and that's what generates them. So you get a lot in the southwest, down in Arizona and New Mexico, and they can get several hundred feet high and look pretty nasty.
Yeah,
they've actually observed them on Mars as well.
Yeah, I've seen them in Arizona, and they some of them really do look...
Yeah, they do look ominous. It's like waterspouts. They look very ominous. I mean, so I wouldn't go running towards one. But
no.
But they occur in, I guess as he was describing, as Jim was describing, in clear skies. I mean, they're generally not associated with clouds or anything, and so they just appear out of nowhere.
Just a week or so ago, I was talking about wind and tornado-like, there were some real tornadoes, devastating tornadoes in the middle of the country. Certainly isn't what we think of as the tornado season.
Yeah, these were, it was November 17th, just this past a week ago Sunday. Severe weather, Wisconsin got strong winds, hail, tornadoes in Illinois, Indiana, killed at least 8 people from what I've last read. If you're watching the Bear game, you know, they emptied that stadium.
Yeah.
I know even on Saturday here, they were looking at, there was a lot of lightning moving through the area in the Badger game the Saturday before that. So they were keeping tabs on that in terms of whether or not to empty that stadium. Because it's not just wind and tornadoes, but the hail, it's the lightning that gets associated with them as well, which is very dangerous.
So
we don't get many of those in November.
Yeah, it's, I mean, just because doesn't cold weather kind of mitigate against?
So what you want when you get severe weather is warm, moist air near the ground and colder, drier air up above. And so in November, we got that cold air up above, but we generally don't get that warm, moist air. In fact, Wisconsin, since 1944, has only had 9 tornadoes in November. So it's not...
Wow.
Not very common.
And we haven't had one this year, have we?
We haven't had one this year. No, I think they avoided us.
We're not going to get one anymore either. What,
well, we have had a tornado in every single month in the state of Wisconsin in that long time period, except for February. February is the only month we haven't had a tornado in Wisconsin.
Is that right?
Yeah.
February. Oh, I suppose it's really cold in February.
It's really cold. We haven't had that many in January either. I mean, 9 in November. You're not going to get that many in January. And February is kind of a short month. You know, so.
Well, Marcus has a question for you from Green Bay. We'll get to that. But we need to take a quick look at the news, weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. Marcus, you stay with us. Steve Ackerman, our guest, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Back after the news. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at the weather with our weather guide, Steve Ackerman, who directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW. You may have a weather or climate question. I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Marcus in Green Bay has been waiting for a while, so let's go there. Marcus, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Last month, I think it was, a caller noted that wherever she was, her local weather stations didn't put on the jet stream as they showed the weather and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt the same way because there is an early morning agricultural show. And at the end, they do a big weather map of the U.S. and they always include the jet stream and then they forecast, you know, what it's going to be. And for me, that makes it a lot more fun because although on the local weather stations, they do the satellite and they do a national one sometimes, and then it helps put things together. But that jet stream and then the forecast, it's like, it's almost like I could get to play, you know, amateur meteorologist. I can watch and listen to their comments. And then I too can kind of have a predict, you know, play with it. And, it just seems like it brings it all together. It makes it more fun. And so I don't know why they don't do it because, you know, weather, especially in the morning on local stations, it takes up so much time in the news. You'd think they could slip that in and whatever. But anyway, so I wanted to ask, if there's any cool websites or apps for my smartphone that, you know, I can click on there and participate in my own way. I mean, just watch it, you know, and have fun
sure.
with it or something.
Sure.
Yeah, I know on it's a good question about apps. I don't know any particular apps, but there must be one out there. But, yeah, I mean, looking at the upper-level flow, the jet stream, if you're up in Green Bay and if you you know, just Google NWS Green Bay and then look for their upper air maps. They're going to have them on there. And then the jet stream, they're usually, you know, shaded in some color so you can easily monitor it. And they'll generally do it over the U.S., but then over the globe as well. And sometimes, even particularly with regard to forecasts, you know, with the model outputs, they'll animate them. And so you can track where the jet stream is going and how it meanders. Because, right, you can tell a lot. If it's meandering or just flowing west-east, that's going to give you two types of different storms.
Yeah, I like that meandering that you said. I never thought of it, but yeah, that's
yeah.
why I'm watching them. And the other thing is, you know, I guess the jet streams play a huge part in your forecasting. So again, it just seems like it's a neat, you know, it's something that could be added to help us all understand what's coming, you know. So,
you know, and somebody might be, and thanks a lot, Marcus, for calling. Somebody might be thinking, what the heck is the jet stream? I hear about it, but I...
Oh, yeah. So the jet stream is just a fast-moving flow of air up high in the atmosphere, probably somewhere between 6 to 8 miles. It's a stream of air. It's moving really fast, like a current of air. Mm-hmm. It's called, it's got the name jet because it became really popular during World War II, as jets, bombers would be flying from east to west, and then they would encounter this stream of air flowing from west to east. And in some cases, they would move relatively slowly because the air is really strong. You can get up to 100, 120 miles per hour up there.
Oh, man.
And it steers, as Marcus is indicating, it steers these weather patterns because associated with them you have divergence and convergence, which is what leads to low-level storm systems.
Ruben in Oshkosh. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I got a quick question about Lake Winnebago. Since we're located near it, I was wondering how that affects our storm weather. It always seems like in the summertime we miss out on the big storms, or they're diverted from us. Does that have any effect on the weather?
It affects the weather in terms of in the summertime, particularly temperature. You know, if you're downwind of the lake, it'll be definitely cooler than if you're upwind. Once big thunderstorms get going, it won't have much of an impact on it. And then in the wintertime, before it freezes over, you could have downstream precipitation effects. So as a winter storm moves over the Great Lake, Lake Winnebago, but the Great Lakes as well, if it's unfrozen, you'll have more evaporation occurring and lead to lake effect snowfall downwind. And then in the wintertime, of course, once that thing freezes over, you know, the friction is really reduced. And so downwind of the lake again, you'll get much stronger winds than you would upwind with the land surface. Towns, cities, forests will definitely slow the air down more.
There you go. Thanks, Ruben.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Jerry in Waupaca. Hi.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I've got the biggest collection of barometers in Wisconsin.
You do think so? How many do you have?
About 300.
Oh, that's more than anybody I know. And are they all the different kinds?
I have German barometers, English barometers, Chinese barometers, every kind of barometer you can think of. And you can come real close to what the weather is going to be. I've got them all set, and but I just thought it'd be interesting for you to know that I've got, if you give me a call sometime, I've got 300 barometers going. I can tell you what the barometric pressure is going to be.
Well, here's the thing. It's sort of like the old saw about a guy with one watch always knows the time. A guy with two watches never knows what time it is.
That's right.
What about for barometers? Do you get pretty accurate? Are they all the same?
Do they all agree?
I set them according to the elevation.
Oh, okay. Huh. So what got you into collecting barometers?
I don't know. One guy gave me a barometer once, and I thought, gee, these things are kind of fun to play with.
Yeah.
So I started collecting barometers, and pretty soon the house was full of barometers.
Wow. Yeah, I can remember a barometer in when I was growing up hanging on the wall of our house. And you're right. They really were used to indicate pressure changes, which were then associated with weather changes. And so, you know, you would set one, I'm sure you have these, where you set the dial and you see how it's changed, and it's either going to get fair weather or precip or...
Yeah, they're if you get good ones, they're pretty accurate. They'll come within, you know, they'll come pretty close to what the weather's going to be.
Yeah. And so do you have mercury ones?
Yeah, I've got maybe 50 mercury ones.
Wow. Holy mackerel.
They're kind of hard to find now because people don't sell them anymore.
Yeah, right. Yeah, mercury is kind of a hazardous material. So you're going to.
Then I have. I marked that one that when we had that big storm about 2 years ago, I walked in. I thought my barometer was broke. The barometric pressure was so low. It was down below. It was like 2,700.
Wow. Yeah, that's a low.
The lowest.
Yeah.
That's the lowest I've ever seen it, so I marked it with a magic marker. And here a couple weeks ago when that storm went through, then it was down around 2,800.
Yeah, we had a low-pressure system go through, a nice low. What was that? I don't remember when that was.
I need a barometer. You let me know.
All right, that sounds good.
Well, thanks, Jerry. Well, here's Steve in Green Bay, too, with a comment. Steve, hi.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to add that I don't have 300, but I've got quite a few barometers, and one of them is a German one from, I think, the 40s or maybe the 50s that is so well made, even though it's a small round one, I never have to set it. Even after a couple years, it still is accurate. So they can make mechanical things accurate if they, you know, do the right engineering and take the time to make them right.
How old is it, do you know, when it was made?
The name is a Luft, L-U-F-F-T, from German. And it doesn't say West Germany, so I'm thinking it's before World War II.
Is it Luft or Luft? Luft.
Luft, 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 yeah.
Yeah, huh.
L-U-F-F-T.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, real accurate. Yeah.
So how many do you have?
Okay, guys.
Yeah.
I probably have about 25 to 30.
25? Wow. Huh.
Well,
I got a long way to go.
Yeah, you do. Right? Yeah.
Thanks, Steve. How many do you have, Steve? Do you have any?
I used to have a mercury barometer in my office. When the National Weather Service in Madison closed down, I asked for it, and they gave it to me because otherwise I don't know what they would do with it. Mm-hmm. But then eventually I got rid of it because I didn't really like a tube of mercury in my office.
It just bothered you.
So it just bothered me. So I do have, you know, at home the, you know, standard weather station, and that includes a barometer along with a temperature and a relative humidity and wind and all that.
All right. Well, we've got Bill in Madison emailed us. Saturday, the worst we heard of snow in Dane County on the media was that there would be snow showers on Monday. But we got enough to cause traffic to slow down considerably. More than an inch in Madison, it seems that a storm that will slow traffic, no matter what the source of the moisture, should be getting better than 12 hours notice. Why is it that we talk about those 10-day predictions so often, yet weather causing today's traffic jam takes so long to be brought before the public?
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree, because we were getting a heads up on this storm at least by Thursday. Now, he is right in that the forecast that I was looking at on Friday seemed to have most of the snowfall to the south of us, so more along towards the border between Wisconsin and Illinois. I don't know where the maximum actually occurred, so yeah, I think we got at least an inch, which was probably more than they were looking at on Saturday for sure. But I think also this is compounded by, you know, it's the first snowfall, and so everybody drives very slowly. And traffic, I know what. I don't know anybody who got to work on time.
No. It was like almost exactly twice as long as normal to get to work.
Right, yep.
So East Washington Avenue, kind of a parking lot.
Yep. I was on a Johnson Street, kind of a parking lot. Trying to go up those big hills was a little tricky for some people.
And from my other office to here, it's about a mile, just under a mile. And it was a slippery walk, too.
Sidewalks are slippery. So I don't know if it... it started off a snowfall. I don't think there was any freezing rain. But actually, the ground isn't all that cold. So it could have been, you know, some of the snowfall gets on there, then melts a little bit, and then freezes. And maybe that's why it's getting a little slippery.
We have some Facebook questions coming up here. You can join in, by the way, if you have a question or comment for our guest today, Steve Ackerman, Director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Facebook comment from Mark. I was in the Navy on a submarine back in the 80s. I rode out 4 typhoons in the mid-Pacific during that time. I recall once we were cruising along at about 400 feet, and we were taking slow 10-degree rolls. Those waves run deep.
Wow, yeah. I guess we normally don't often think about, the waves just starting off the surface. They're running through the entire water system. I wouldn't have guessed that much, but if he's down 400 feet. I mean, you move that water up and down 100 feet, I guess it's going to propagate downwards.
Facebook question from Rebecca. Wondering what your guess, what your opinion is, Steve, on the changes in the weather and climate with regards to the increase in severe weather.
Boy, that's a tough one to figure out. You know, we know that the climate is changing, and it's easy to measure that change in terms of means and medians, you know, statistics that way in terms of temperature, precipitation, and things like that. But when you start going at severe weather, where you're looking at the numbers of tornadoes or really big hail or something like that, those events aren't all that common to begin yeah. with. And so you really need you know, a different type of statistics to apply or a longer time series to try and figure that out. And that's been tough.
Gene in Appleton has a question for you. Hi, Gene.
Hi there. I love this weather program. It should be on much longer.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And more often. Where would you take a barometer to be checked and or repaired? I know I could probably, well, I already have gotten people say, oh, I could probably do that, but I want it to be done by someone who really knows their business.
Yeah.
I'd take it to Jerry in Wapaka. Yeah. He's got 300 of them.
Yeah. No. Oh, that's great, bro.
Right. Oh, man.
You know, so you're Appleton, you're not far from Green Bay. I'd no. contact the National Weather Service office there.
Yeah.
And even if they can't, you know, fix it or something, you could go and bring your barometer there and see what the relative difference is between yours and their official one, which is routinely calibrated.
Well, when we get a really good, and I'm a weather freak, when we get a really, a storm where there should be a drastic difference, mine apparently just sort of always says fair.
Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not...
That's not good.
Yeah.
No. No.
You know, well, and in fact, you probably don't even know... You don't even have to go all the way to the Green Bay National Weather Service office. Not that it's that far from you. But if you just monitor what their observations are and keep track with what yours are, you'll be able to tell if yours has any particular bias as being, you know, always too high or always too low.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, guys. Very
let me try
much.
That.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. We have Jeff in Madison next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, gentlemen. Just want to say hi, and I did hear the non-forecast for the winter. I think it's kind of it's interesting with the long-range winter forecast in that we haven't had too many occasions recently where we haven't had La Nina or El Nino to deal with, and now we're in neutrality. So we're really at the mercy of the winds of fate, but it's kind of interesting to know that one or two weeks out, we really have no idea what's going to happen, which is further evidence that that's how it is all the time anyway. Would you not agree?
Yes, I think you've worded it very nicely, although I might phrase it in a more positive way, that we know we're not going to be above normal or below normal. we're confident about that. And it's right, as you're pointing out, you know, what really drives our wintertime signal in terms of seasonal forecasting is whether or not we have an El Nino and a La Nina, either one of those yeah. going on. And you're right, without them, yeah. it's a flip of the coin almost.
Exactly. And yeah. the other comment I had is that when they did the tornado watch for our area last on the 17th, and of course yeah. I was watching. I'm a great radar watcher because you can see so much when you learn how to read the satellites and the radars. You can really watch them form.
Yeah.
In our area, the National Weather Service or the Storm Prediction Center in Oklahoma City labeled our particular watch a little bit differently than they usually do. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, they did it as a what is it called? Like a PSD?
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's a relatively new category, and I'm trying to remember what that stands for, and it's slipping my mind. But it gives a high – it's kind of highlighting that the situation could be really dangerous. And so I forget what the P stands for. Probability of severe destruction or something like that is what
right.
it stands for.
It's
kind of a heads up that
really, – Yeah, we were really close to that.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, and actually I think Chicago was in it. And so yeah. some people are kind of surprised that they didn't empty the stadium just a little bit sooner or more. I was more concerned about, you know, why are they emptying the stadium and not the football players? Because,
yeah.
you know,
exactly.
if you keep the football players on the field, then people aren't going to want to leave. Right.
right.
If they don't think they're going to play. Yeah.
Well, Steve and Larry, thank you so much. Have a wonderful holiday.
Yeah, you too, Jeff. Thank you very much for your call and question. And Pete in La Crosse. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Steve. Hey, I don't know if it was last winter or in the springtime, but there was observed a lot more north-south meandering, I guess we'll call it, we like that word today, of the jet stream. And it typically goes more circular around the pole, but it was meandering a lot more north to south. Is it still doing that? Has that abated? Or, you know, what do you think that's going to be? Because if I recall correctly, that phenomenon hadn't been observed so much prior to a year or so ago. So what do you think?
Yeah, you know, when I was just looking at the jet stream, I was mostly focusing on the U.S. and what U.S. weather is going to be going on, mostly because of the, you know, upcoming holiday. So I didn't look at the global picture of how it's meandering.
It's a good one to look at, and we'll talk about it next time.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
Well,
yeah, sorry about that.
Pete, if you can stay listening for a month. As a matter of fact, you're on the last Monday of the month, so in December, that's December 30th.
December 30th, okay. So that's close to the end, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to guess. If I had to guess that it is meandering, I should have brought my iPad and quickly opened it up and looked. But, you know, given this cold air that's just streaming down here, that's coming from the north. And so that's usually got a meandering as opposed to what we call a zonal jet stream, which just flows west to east.
Mm. We'll look it up, Pete. Yeah. We'll get back to you. Brian in Iola. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about high pressure. I was working in the airport at La Crosse, maybe in 1988, and we had a day in the winter when the pressure got up to 31.0.
Wow.
And then the altimeter settings, it wouldn't go any higher. So
wow.
A lot of the planes weren't allowed to fly and so on. Surely the pressure gets higher than that, though. I was wondering how high it gets.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, 31 inches is a pretty high pressure. I don't know what the
weather.
Yeah, colder weather, you're going to have a lot of air around you. You could have pretty good high pressures in the summertime, too. It's not just cold air. But, yeah, I don't know what the record high pressure is. And a lot of times we think, or at least I think, in terms of millibars. Mm. So I always have to convert from millibars to inches of mercury.
Yeah, and I don't know how to do that.
So. Yeah, I got a little app that does it. But
But it was, a lot of planes were grounded.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 31 inches is really high. I mean, usually, you're talking 28, 29 inches. When you get into 30s, it's getting high. When you get up to 31, that's
pretty... So planes can't get a lift?
31.
Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's as high as the gauge would go, so...
Yeah.
Oh, man. Thanks, wow. Brian. So a plane can't get a lift, or is that way? Where you...
Yeah, usually you have problems with planes when you're going low pressures and warm air.
It's the extremes
so
on
it's
either
the extremes
end.
That they might, right, yeah. Yeah, that's why they would close the airport. I would imagine the extreme end of it.
So, and again, we're in for the weather for the rest of the winter. Probably we're in maybe it'll be colder, maybe it'll be warmer.
John thinks December is definitely going to be warmer. I don't know, I haven't talked to him. He just left on Friday, I think. So I don't know if he's changed that forecast because we got some cold air. I mean, November turned out to be colder than normal, which is the first time in a long time that's happened, 9 years or so.
Steve, always a pleasure.
Yep, great to be here.
You'll be back on December 30th. I'll actually be away that day. Judith will be with you.
Oh, good. We like
she's
Judith.
Been, yeah, she's been looking forward to it,
yeah,
as a matter of fact. In the meantime, thank you very much. Steve Ackerman directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, professor at UW-Madison. Tomorrow, Norm Gilliland has published his third novel. We'll talk about it with him tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.